Welcome to episode 312 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Tish
and Dr. T. In this episode, we review round 14 of the NRL. We discuss the Challenge Cup final and much, much more. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 312 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the greatest game of all, rugby league. This is Rugby League for the people. I'm your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. Tish, how are you doing this week?
Oh, Dr. T, I am doing well after the King's birthday long weekend. And look, big shout out to all the Bulldogs fans out there, the long-suffering Bulldogs fans. Special shout out to my buddy Nick, long-suffering fan, loves the Bulldogs. Finally, he's happy that the Bulldogs are so far, we're past the halfway point in the competition and they're in the top eight. Can you imagine that? So, yeah. Exciting times in rugby league when the Bulldogs are doing well.
Yeah, and on the flip side, the Eels team couldn't do it for the actual King Gutherson. On his 200th NRL game, they couldn't get it done. In fact, they kind of blundered it at the end. Mm. We'll get into that later. Look, we've got a lot to get into, so let's jump right into Tackle 1, the NRL Round 13 review. Here we go. And the King has already corrected me. It's round 14 review, not round 13. Apologies for that. I'm already text message from King Charles. Yep, sorry. Get it right, son. Okay, great. Thanks. Round 14 was the King's birthday weekend round for the NRL. It started off pretty badly for your West Tigers, Tish, unfortunately. 56-14 loss at the hands of the Dargons. I mean, the Dragons, the St. George Warrior Dragons there. The Rabbitohs, 46-12 over the Titans. The Warriors, 42-12 over the Cowboys. So the first three games of the weekend were absolute drubbings. Then we saw a couple of tighter games. The Sharks, 22-12 over the Broncos. The Storm, 36-28, an exciting one against the Knights. The Panthers, 32-22 over the Manly Warringah Seagulls. And look, my match of the round, the Bulldogs, 22-18 over my Eels. In front of 45,496 at a Coors Stadium on Monday, a public holiday, unbelievable. Officially, the game in terms of attendance, the highest attended game of the round, over and above the Broncos and the Sharks at Suncorp Stadium. So that's a big deal. As I've always said, the Eels and the Bulldogs always bring out the best in the crowds. And I think once those two teams do well, you'll see some massive crowds between them. Look, game of the round, I think for mine, I'd already mentioned Bulldogs and Eels. What about you, Tish? Which one did you see as a game of the round?
Yeah, look, I have to agree. I think obviously it was the closest game in terms of the actual result, but it was a cracking game too. And, it went right down to the wire. There was a few notable plays towards the end where you kind of felt, for example, I think Moses, he had a great first half, but in the second half, the wheels kind of fell off and you kind of in the dying stages were a bit missing. So it revealed a lot towards, what we're going to do with State of Origin, what we're going to do in terms of the Blues. I know we'll talk about that later. I thought the Bulldogs showed great resiliency. They were down to 12 players. They had a man in the sin bin, but they didn't concede any points throughout that time. And that actually seemed to be a catalyst for them to improve. And also, Gutherson and Moses actually showed a lot of smarts, right? Where they, there was a point in the game where, it looked like Moses kicked it. They did another kick, but then the ball went over after the second kick into the dead ball line. But they called a captain's challenge because they said, it didn't go before it went dead in over the dead. I had actually dropped it, sir. So They actually used the Captain's Challenge in a very unique way because they kind of, in a way, penalized themselves, but, you know, took the lesser of two evils by using the Captain's Challenge, which was, kind of amazing. So I thought, yeah, some rugby league spark there. And look, the reason why I'm talking so much about this game is to avoid attention to another tackle that we're going to talk about, the Tigers and letting in 40 points to the Dragons, who aren't even in the top eight. So
The Dragons, yeah, let's maybe not talk about that. But look, we have to say, I think Zach Lomax scored like twice as many points, I think, on his own than the Tigers did. I think he actually broke the record or he equaled the record for most points by single player in a Dragons team. Is that right?
He broke the record.
So that's amazing. Record breaking stuff there. I've got to say the Warriors to do what they did at home, away at the Cowboys home, is pretty amazing. I thought that was pretty special. But look, the Sharks continue to confound. Just when we thought they were pretenders again, they are now contenders again in front of a massive crowd at the Broncos, who is on, you know, themselves are on the up. 22-12, clearly sort of staking their claim. They're keeping up with, I think the Storm are officially number one at the moment, but they're keeping up there. So continue to live to fight another day. And look, the Panthers as well, against a, you know, Manly wearing, like, if you look at, these are all games that were backups after, you know, all players backing up after Origin. You saw DCE on a high, returning to Manly, and he couldn't get it done against the Panthers, who some of whom didn't play that well in the Blues Origin team, and yet they did the job, and so that, you know, it's to be commended. I think the Panthers, when they get the ball rolling, and I know they were at home, but they're in front of 20,000 at Sunday afternoon game, so must have been real great atmosphere out there. A lot of good games. One question before we move on. Bulldogs, look, I know they did it, you know, against a team that, to be honest, was often a shambles in the second half, the Parramatta Eels. Are they top eight contenders? They're in the top eight now. Does that mean they're going to sustain it? I like what I saw I didn't like what I saw as an Eels fan, but in terms of, you know, if you just look at the way they came out, they were 10 points behind early in the second half. And they were much more dangerous than the Eels from the get-go in the second half in particular. They were faster, they were speedier, they were more enterprising. They were what the Eels should have been after they went 10 points up. And they unfortunately, the Eels weren't. But, yeah, I got to put it all down to Stephen Crichton. I mean, he was absolutely a beast. He drove them. You saw he on many occasions after a try was scored or after a particular break in play, he would take two or three of the young'uns aside and he talked to them very, very kind of animatedly, like a captain should. And that was really great to see. And I think it's fair to say that everything that's happening with the Bulldogs on the field, all the good things that are happening is down to players like Stephen Crichton, not just him, but I think it's a really good thing. So the question is, Bulldogs, are they top eight contenders now, or is this just a bit of luck of the draw going up against the hapless Eels?
Yeah, well, look, I think the Eels, their roster looks a lot better than where they're sitting. Obviously, they've had a few problems to go through. So I think that's probably why people could say that. But then look, the Bulldogs, they have the second best defense in the comp right now, right? They're even ahead of teams like the Melbourne Storm and, and the Roosters and the Sharks, when it comes to defense, right? So I think from that point of view, they definitely seem to do that. Obviously, so the weaker part of their game is their attack, but their attack seems to be improving. I think Toby Sexton has done a great job when he's now been the halfback, right? And they seem to be a lot more fluid. Plus, they seem to be playing better. So I think everything is all on the up for the Bulldogs. They've used 28 players so far. So it's not like they've not had to deal with injuries and things like that. They've, you know, they're sort of midway when it comes to the number of players you use. So they have enough depth. They seem to be able to do everything. And look, I suppose the main thing is that the discipline's been a lot better too. So, yeah, I think all the signs are trending upwards. And, you know, they're not necessarily a flashy. I think I'd be more scared if they were, like, super flashy in attack and not really showing anything in defense. But because the defense seems solid, it feels like they're going to be in the contest in a lot more games than other teams, right? Because, you know, they're averaging less than 18 points or about 3 tries a game that they're letting in. So, you know, they're always going to give them a chance because all they really need to score is 3 tries of themselves and a penalty goal. That's all they need to do to win every game, right? So when their defense is able, if they're able to trust the defense, I think it's a good foundation for a team. So, you know, 3 wins, I think they're equal in the number of, the biggest winning streak at the moment. They're equal with the Warriors, the Bulldogs 3 from 3. So yeah, they're definitely riding high.
All right, let's get into a bit of a depressing discussion. Tackle 2, are the Tigers in crisis? Here we go.
Okay, I think that's enough of that. So,
yeah, we could get in trouble. look, the Tigers. Not only have they lost, is it now 10 in a row? Am I correct in saying, is it 9 or 10 in a row? I've lost track.
I lost count after 18.
I've lost count. Lost count. I think it's probably 10 in a row. Lachlan Galvey, their star player that we were lauding earlier in the season as you know, a up and coming kid and part of the plan, the Benji plan, now wants out, and rumors are that he's been saying he wants out at any cost, but Shane Richardson refuses to release him. So you got their star players that want to leave. And then you add to that, Benji was under a bit of pressure a week or so ago when during the Origin kind of break. for taking a mid-season family trip to Fiji. Now, on the back of the discussion we've had about him kind of, instituting a work-life balance and all that kind of thing, I think it's fair to say, look, a lot of people would support that, but I guess the question is the optics don't look very good when your team is struggling and the head coach decides to kind of take a mid-season break when I guess questions should be asked about whether he should be just knuckling down a little bit and working a bit harder to get things right and turn the ship around. So, and this happens often, you know, this doesn't just happen in footy. This happens as well in politics. You hear it all the time, you know, when there's a crisis, then the prime minister, the premier, whatever, so the health minister has to cancel their family trip. Because even though the bureaucracy can work and function as normal, the optics look bad if the head of whatever agency or whatever thing is away when there's a particular crisis, like whether it's a, you know, government crisis or, you know, financial crisis or, climate crisis, could be anything. I guess it's fair to say the Tigers are in crisis. So, yeah. There obviously was a lot of pressure on Benji. So I guess, Tish, as our resident Tigers fanatic, obviously you'll be pretty disappointed at where the team is going at the moment. They are dead last at the moment. Now that the Rabbitohs won that game, the Tigers are officially last. And I think deservedly so. If you look at, losing 10 in a row, having not even coming close in many of those games, it's been pretty disappointing. So, Tish, what's going wrong? And then we'll talk a little bit. We'll unpack that a bit, and then we'll talk about what could the solution be.
Yeah, well, look, I think, well, put it this way, we probably don't have enough time for maybe 4 or 5 podcast episodes to go through everything they need to do to fix the Tigers. It almost feels like a special series, right? Because, people are saying, look, this is all because Tedesco, Brooks and Moses left all those years ago, and they're still trying to recover from that. And they talk about, like, you know, all the different coaching regimes and all that kind of stuff. But I think you just got to put all that past history out. You just got to look at what the team has performed this year on the field. And, you know, what I could say is that there's been a lot of games where they've looked at patches to be good. They've been able to score a couple of quick tries in different patches and things like that. But then they just aren't able to put together an 80-minute performance. They don't seem to be able to handle adversity well, even handle a decision going against them well, right? On the St. George game, there was, one of the players, young players, he sort of made the mistake of trying to do a double movement, right? And as soon as he made that double movement, you saw him just start to punch his head. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? And that's the kind of, that's kind of sums up what the Tigers seem to be doing. I think they all know when they make a mistake, and they just think, brain explosion, brain explosion, brain explosion. But they aren't able to sort of recover from that. So I don't know. I feel like that's the kind of the main thing. So, and look, with Lachlan Gavin, I think this is yes. Look, I agree. Like the way that probably Shane Richards in his handling it is good for the club in terms of we've got to show a bit of strength. You know, this kid's only 18, 19. He's just fresh out of the HSC. You know, we've given him an opportunity. The reality is no other club would give him that opportunity at this age. But the Tigers, because we realize that we're a team that are building, we need, it's about giving our young players as much experience as possible. So that's why the reason why he's had the opportunity to play is because he's playing for the Tigers. That's what I could say, because in any other roster, he wouldn't get that opportunity, right? But now he's saying that, he was, I think the club wanted him to take injections to the arm because he's got a fracture. He's got an arm injury, but he didn't want to take it. And I think he felt like he was sort of forced to take it. And then there's some sort of, and I think that's what's causing this and not being happy and all that kind of stuff. But I think ultimately, from the Tigers' point of view, we can't pin our hopes on a kid that young. Like, I think, they're bound to not be in the right frame of mind because they're still sort of learning professionalism, right? They're very young in their career. So I don't necessarily think that we should be expecting them the same standards as what we'd expect a season thing. So I think on the Lachlan Gavin issue, I think the Tigers are handling it the way they should handle it. They're not going to release him. They're being strong on him. And I think they just need to take the young kid aside and just go, look, perspective a little bit. What you want to do at the end of the year, you can decide on that. But I think at the moment, you've got this opportunity. We're giving you this opportunity. And, the opportunity is tied to the results that you can bring us and, as a 5/8, so play well. So I think that's the Lachlan Gavin issue. In terms of what's happening in the team, I don't think it's to do with the training and the, Benji Marshall's work-life culture balance thing that is going on, the Zen stuff, because I think some of that stuff is really important to players, right? But I think more the fact of them just, how to stop themselves from taking these. I think they seem to take errors really wrongly, and then in the game that they sort of get really frustrated and everything. And then as soon as the whistle goes, even though they've lost by 50, they're smiling and joking around with the opposition too. So I kind of feel if you're a bit more lighthearted when you're playing, I don't think you'd make as many errors, right? Because you're not going to be dependent on trying to catch every ball. But at the same time, here you are, sort of joking around at the end of the game where you should be more, I don't know. Yeah, so I just think they just need to have a bit of understand, and I don't know how you drill that into them, but I think just a bit of a mindset shift in terms of, who they are. And it's very difficult to change your mindset if you base your confidence on just the result itself, because the result is bad. It's easy to be full of confidence if you are the Sharks or, if you're the Broncos. It's much more difficult to have confidence in yourself when you're running last, right? But I think they need to find that somehow. And it's funny, they'll actually win more games once they have more confidence in their own ability, which they seem to lack because they're just clouded by the number of errors they make. So, yeah, look, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a degree in psychology. I wish somebody I knew had one. They could maybe, dissect, analyze from a distance. We need Fraser Crane on their case a little bit, Dr. T. Do you think you could help? Do you think you know somebody that can help?
Well, of course, Niles. Of course, I can. No, sorry, that was just me channeling. Of course, I can help. And I think you, I look. I got to say, Tish, you nailed it. I think there's a couple of things that you mentioned that, it absolutely, they're kind of like signs that something's not quite right. So, you see this all the time when people kind of complain about players joking around after at the end of a game, and you know, especially, you know, I get that. There's an element of that which is, you know, players go into battle and then at the end of it there's a bit of a release and then it's like, okay, we're all mates. And, you know, and some of the old school fans don't like that because they think, no, everyone has to be like Tommy Redonic because I want to kill the other player. You know, like, do not ever fraternize or go have a beer with someone. No, I don't believe that. This is the professional age, and I do think that there is an element of, you know, a job's a job, but at the end of the day they're kind of there to compete. There is something about, though, again it's about the optics of seeing players kind of act all jokey and kind of not serious and not taking it seriously, where fans think, oh, well, that, and I think erroneously fans take that as that means they were mucking around during the game as well, which I actually, the way you interpreted some of the signs that you've seen about the kind of frustration that you've seen in Tigers players, I think is something that you will not see. Oh, I don't think I've heard anyone talk about this in the media. They just talk about the high-level stuff, and they don't talk about the details that you've just analysed. And I think that's actually the most important thing, because it shows that players out there, they're frustrated because they feel so under pressure, which let's unpack that a little bit. They're under pressure. They know – they probably – well, maybe they don't know. They probably do not have the strongest roster at all. They've probably got one of the weakest rosters in the whole NRL. You would think that under that kind of scenario that players would be a bit more kind of – feel a bit more freer to kind of try their hand at things and be kind of more free-flowing, especially having a coach like Benji who's not necessarily – we're certainly not a Craig Bellamy in terms of working them to the bone. So you would think that under that environment that you would have players that are having a bit of free reign and a bit of trust is given to them to kind of play in a bit more freely. But in fact, what you're seeing is the opposite. And I reckon that really is a fundamental problem that we're seeing is that players, I feel like when they're playing the game under this level of pressure, wherever it comes from, it's clear that they look like they're playing like a team under pressure, and that any mistake is kind of, what's the word, kind of amplified over and above what it should be. And when you're seeing them smile at the end, I don't see that as they were mucking around during the game. I see that as, oh, that ordeal was over. The game's over now. It's a release. It's a sign of I've just gone through hell. And we've lost again, and we got flogged, and that was terrible. Let's just have it's like you know, the body, the endorphins will be kind of released, and they, you know, who knows what's going through their heads. But I think that's what I'm seeing, and I agree with what you're saying that's those two things make sense if you look at them together as these players are going through an ordeal, and it is a mental ordeal, and then at the end of it, they get so relieved that it's over that it's almost like they hate. This is a danger, right? If this keeps up, players are going to hate playing, and they're going to—it's almost going to be like a trauma to actually play the game because they know that they're going to get flogged, and then it becomes a vicious cycle, and then they'll never get out of it. So I think, in terms of the solution, I think you said it right. It's a mindset shift that's required, and I think ironically, what Benji's trying to do. It to kind of make it more work-life balance. He's setting a good example. However, come to think of it now, I kind of thought initially, oh, Benji being a coach will be fantastic because of his style and his free-flowing and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think the answer is more discipline or more, you know, obviously they need a better defensive coach and they need to kind of work on some sort of camaraderie. And ironically, I think if this is a Hollywood film, you'd almost need you'd need someone to come in and just go, Rightio, rule book out the window. Let's get to know each other better. Forget the drills. Forget the, you know, we don't need to practice drills. We just need to get bond more as a team, and the defense will follow. And all you have to do is look at the Bulldogs. You know, the players haven't changed much from, you know, beginning of the year or late last year to this year, but their mental attitude has. And that's the difference. So I think that's the solution, is they need to kind of go back to basics. One of the other things I want to mention, and I'll get your views on this, and we'll move it on. What do you think it means to have someone, a legend like Benji, being the coach? Do you think it kind of, because you sort of said something about they kind of amplify, I use the word amplify, I forget what the word is, but catastrophize is the right word. I think from a psychological perspective, they catastrophize every mistake. So it's like, oh, damn it, you know. Whereas a good team, a team that you want to be like, is a team that's like, even if you drop the ball 5 meters in front of your goal line, doesn't matter, we can stop them. We've got a good defense. Yeah. I trust in my team. Let's get on. And the teammates kind of back each other up and go, don't worry, get your head out of your out of your bum and let's get into it. Forget that. Don't worry about it. Let's get on with it. And I think the idea of maybe the goal is too much of an Everest to climb, and what they really need is smaller goals and focus on the little things. And you're right, like maybe focus on, you know, like they were actually winning at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And then let in 30 points in the second half. Now that to me is exactly what was happening with the Eels before Brad Arthur was sacked. They kept losing the plot, and that to me is just, there's a mental thing happening there. And I'm not suggesting that Benji will get sacked. I'm suggesting that the problem is the exact same problem as what the Eels had. I think the solution is Benji has to kind of remind them, and almost it's like, let's just say it wasn't Benji. Let's just say it was a Jason Taylor or something, someone who hasn't reached the heights of legendary status like a Benji Marshall. Maybe that would be a better kind of, he needs to kind of maybe depersonalize himself. What's the right word? Make himself more accessible to players. Maybe that's the thing. They look too highly to him. Maybe they just need to look at him as he's someone just trying to get them to work on things 5 minutes, 10 minutes at a time. You know, don't worry about the score. Don't worry about your little things. Get the little things right. And maybe they're just, maybe having someone like a legend as your coach is a bad thing. Who knows? I'll throw that to you as the last question. Benji, as the coach, do you think that's potentially causing part of the problem?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. T. And just to actually build a little bit about what you said, it's kind of interesting because, like, because the way you phrased it, like, about how they sort of react and what the consequences of, you know, the release factor of, like, hey, you know, the game's finally over and they sort of, you know, we've gotten over it. Well, that's probably why you're hearing reports at Lachlan Gavin saying, hey, I don't enjoy playing, right? I can't wait to get out of here, because that's, again, that symptom of the fact that they don't enjoy playing, because maybe like there's too much pressure in what they're playing. And I think, yeah, and I think that's where, yeah, potentially if you have, if you haven't played, like, yeah, it's probably why a lot of times, you know, some of the best players, I think they're really good as Origin coaches, but maybe for a long-term deal, like, you know, where it's week in, week out, they kind of suffer a bit because, you know, Benji's seen as this natural talent, seen as this guy that, you know, was like a superstar from a young age all the way to his end of his career. And that I it's standard that players might feel, well, I don't have the same natural talent. So, you know, but they're expecting themselves to live up to the Benji framework. I don't know if that's psychologically going through their heads or not. So I think where Benji can go is that he's got to relate back to what it was like when he played for the Dragons and when he played for Brisbane and he wasn't a regular first grader, right? You know, where he kind of had to, you know, he was kind of humbled by the experience of leaving the Tigers, going to Union, then coming back, a bit of a failure, and how he comes back from failure. And I think that's what exactly the message or, you know, the lessons that he learned in that tight is probably the lessons that he wants to get his young Tigers to get through right now. You know, those lessons learned could be very valuable right now to what they need to do. And I think, you know, what's going to be interesting, I know we can't have mics, you know, on them, but, you know, I'm interested to see what happens when a try gets scored against them, right? You know, when they lose the lead, when two tries are scored against them, what's the talk in the huddle, right? How, you know, what are they, you know, what type of tool are they using to get themselves back mentally focused on what they need to do ahead? You know, like, do they have a mechanism to be able to sort of counteract this diversity, you know, this adversity, right? You know, because maybe, look, we all do it when there's a try scored against our teams. We think, well, where was the mistake? Where did they go wrong? When they think, well, actually, it was actually one mistake that caused that try to be scored, right? What were the things that we did well? You know, hey, they might have scored a break, but we had three players chasing them, you know? Well done, Buller, for chasing them. I know you couldn't, you know, you couldn't all do it by yourself. Next time, let's have four or five people on there. So if somebody makes a mistake, we don't suffer a great consequence. You know, like, I know it's kind of a bit like, you know, Ned Flandery, right? You know, like taking a negative into a positive. But I think they need to have a voice on the field that actually does that, because I don't think they have that right at the moment. And that's why you see them just, you know, because it feels like when there's a try scored against them, there's like an investigation and sort of a don't do it again attitude, as opposed to a hey, let's try and make sure that, you know, the next time we make a mistake, it doesn't cost us a try. You know what I mean? That I think they've got to try and figure out a way that they could handle those negative things that come into the game. And look, the life of a up-and-coming NRL player, perhaps, they only get really exposed to this stuff until they make it to the top grade, you know? While they're playing for juniors, they might have played in really successful teams that don't have to go through as much adversity as what they have to do when they finally get it to the top grade. So that learning process is it's something that you just have to unfortunately go through. So I don't think the answer is ripping them apart. I think the answer is more actually trying to give them maybe some tools, some affirmations that they need to repeat or something like that.
They need a Tony Robbins.
They can't let adversity stop them from playing the footy, because they stopped after two tries scored, left them in, they just gave up, right?
No, right, and yeah, 100%, and that's the sign that there is a mental breakdown there, or there's a lack of resilience, or there's no, you said it right there, there's no voice out there that kind of helps stop that, and really it's lack of leadership, which means you don't have the right kind of senior players. So what they should be doing, first thing, is Tigers, they should be looking at senior players that are like proper leaders. That's what they need. Now, I'm looking at Luai. Luai is coming next year, and I think he is actually, you know, he's not going to turn the whole world around, but I think having a voice like him out there, if you look at him in Origin, he's like Crichton 2.0. Like, they both play and talk the same way as leaders. Now, obviously, Crichton has had more captaincy attempts, I think, than Luai, but Luai also acts the same way. So I think that kind of thing is a good thing. Having a player like that, you need more than one, though, and you need enough of them out there to kind of remind them, all the young kids, when they muck up, that it's like, don't worry, let's just get on with it. Pat on the head, pat on the bum, let's get on with it. And I think that's what they need. Look at what happened with Parramatta. You know, we had one player, Gutherson, that was there through most of those games, and then he got injured. And obviously the Eels fell apart until Gutho and Moses came back. Now, you might say, well, it's the skill of Moses or whatever. It's not just that. I think it's just the attitude of, I'm just going to go out there and try and do something, you know?
Yeah.
Regardless of, you know, I'll take a risk, and it doesn't matter if it doesn't come off, I'll keep going. That's if you look at Moses, the way he plays, that's how he plays. And I know we're going to talk about him in a minute, but which is a bit of a segue, but anyway, I think to me it's about the recruiting the right kind of experience and leadership, and I'll go back to what I said, and this is my final thought, is that I think I said that in my little Fraser Crane monologue before, but it was about, you know, they need to kind of bond together. Maybe they just need to kind of throw the rule book out a little bit and do a bit of a bonding kind of thing and gel as a team. And if you gel as a team and you get to like each other, then yes, you can have mistakes and mistakes can be made. But I'll tell you what, you will not capitulate in a second half of a match that you're winning with poor defense like that. You will back each other up and you'll go at it 100%. If you look at, you know, they need the injection of the Queensland spirit, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. That's exactly what they need. And I think bonding is kind of the key thing. Maybe they could benefit from a Tony Robbins or something like that, Anthony Robbins, to kind of come in there and sort of remind them about, you know, the important things to get
the trainer needs to have an acoustic guitar. And then when the try gets scored against them, go out there with the acoustic, get them all lined up, just start strumming, and then let's start singing something together to get ourselves back up and going. You know,
get the mascot to be a singing mascot, whatever. Put Eye of the Tiger like you did earlier. Why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right,
let's move on. Let's move on to tackle number three. We're going to talk about, are the two Mitchells back in the Blues frame? Here we go. All right, so no sooner have we gone through State of Origin 1, are we now going to be talking about the teams for State of Origin 2 being announced very shortly? In fact, I think it'll be next weekend or the end of this weekend. So we're already looking at a couple of pretty key decisions for the Blues. Obviously, Queensland, not much to do. They're on a winning ticket at the moment. It's all up to the Blues to turn this around in a miracle. And look, if you're looking for a miracle, the biblical Moses is what you should be looking for. But look, a lot of people are saying that Nico Hines is on the outer. His performance was not very good. We talked about a lot of the kicking game was pretty poor. I don't know if he was actually directed to do that, but he looked like he really was out of his depth and not really making a dent in the kicking, not making a dent in the attack. The attack looked a bit confused. I think there's question marks around James Tedesco as well. I know I thought he played pretty well, but I thought he also kind of got in the way, as he always used to or has been doing recently. So we're looking at, you know, the halves and 5/8 kind of situation is a bit up in the air. I think a lot of people are thinking Hines might be out and Mitchell Moses might be a replacement. Obviously, he was there last year in the dead rubber game when they won that one. You know, maybe take that with a grain of salt, but that's what a lot of people are thinking. And another Mitchell in the frame is Latrell Mitchell. And obviously, we had massive problems in the centres. You know, wouldn't have happened if he was there. He could play fullback if we need to as well, if there was an issue there. But having a Latrell there from the get-go, you saw how he demolished whoever it was on the weekend. Was it the Titans? I think it was. Rabbitohs on fire. Latrell, I think it comes down to, you know, I know he was kind of a bit unfit and had some issues, but, you know, is he one of our best centres? I would say yes. So why don't we pick him, I think, is the question. So question is, are the two Mitchells back in the frame to enter the Blues team? What do you think, Tish?
Yeah, well, look, I think if the question is, are they in the frame? I think it's a definite yes. Are they ready to be picked? Jury is out for probably both of them, I'd say. But I think Latrell might be a little closer than Moses, only because I just think with Moses, like, that second half was probably not his best, right? So I think that might be the reason why you might not go for Mitchell Moses right now. Of course, it's hard to compare against the incumbent Nico Hines, who didn't have a good origin, but he didn't play for the Sharks either, right? So, but he is going to be playing this weekend. So I think, you know, The performance of both these players this weekend is going to be critical. What I want to see is obviously their kicking games, because I think that for both of them, I think that's where New South Wales really, really suffered with a poor kicking game. So I think it's going to be important that they sort of, you know, we sort of identify which one of these is going to give us the better results when it comes to the kicks. And I think that's where. Yeah, so that's probably what I want to see. Latrell Mitchell, I think he had an outstanding game against the Rabbitoh, you know, this weekend. I think I've already penciled him in. I think we just want to see another good performance out of him because, you know, if I think about Crichton and I think about Mitchell, I think they are the best centre options for us anyway, based on who's available. I can't think of anyone else that could play in the centres that's eligible for New South Wales at the moment that's playing better than those two. So that's where I think that's where it goes. Plus, I also think that Latrell Mitchell gives us that option of a spare fullback. Say if we go for Tedesco or, you know, or even Edwards and there's an injury, we could cover that. I would like to see Burton in on the bench at number 14, replacing Hudson Young. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be Hudson Young. It could be another one of the, you know, forwards. But I think Hudson Young is my likely choice because he played less than 30 minutes. And that way, just we're covering a lot more positions. So, yeah, I think Latrell is ahead of Moses. I think he's a bit more penciled in. I think Moses, I just think that second half, I think, obviously, yeah, he didn't really step up when he needed to. I think he even admitted that. So I don't think we're saying anything that is against it. I think we could all feel like he's the type of player that can do that. But just as I said that, the only other person I can think of is Cody Walker, but who's also been playing seven recently. But I think Luai is kind of a shoe-in. So, yeah, I don't know how that's going to go. So I think, yeah, it's difficult. I mean, does Nico Hynd deserve to be dropped after that performance? Probably, but I think you should also give him an opportunity to at least correct the wrong. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I think he's been given a proper opportunity, and I think there was, you know, I think a lot of people are sort of saying that there was, you know, didn't really show much of, you know, there's other players that play with, are given one or two opportunities and show something and a reason for reselection. And I think with Nico Hynd, look, I know he's a good player and he plays really well, but some players are really good at the, you know, at the level of club level, but not necessarily at Origin level. And you just have to sort of admit that that's the case. You know, for ages, I think Cleary was kind of hasn't even now. I don't think Cleary can be seen as having dominated Origin to that extent. So I think we've got lots of players who are really great at club level and just don't make the step up for whatever reason. Again, some of it is to do with the trying too hard thing, and maybe they got a touch of the Tigers and Eels malaise in terms of putting too much pressure on themselves. I do think, however, that Moses kind of would have posed more danger to the attack and has. If you see the way he plays and what he's done to Parramatta, he's opened them up in terms of the backline moves. Now, it doesn't mean, as you said, he's. He's a 100, you know, like 80-minute player necessarily, and he plays constantly like that. But he's added that dimension which the Blues could have really benefited from, and Nico Hynd did not provide. You know, the question of whether Moses and Luai operate as a functioning kind of backline. I think you could argue that, you know, one operates on one side, one operates on the other side, and they both can do the job. You know, Luai tried his best, but he didn't really have a center there that could, well, you know, after 6 minutes, he didn't really have a center. So a lot of the argument against Luai to me doesn't make sense because he basically lost the player that he would have had outside him on his side of the field, which is the left side. You know, and Crichton had to be moved there where he wouldn't normally be there. He'd normally be on the right. So I think there's an argument to be made that if you balance the team right the way they should be, then having Latrell outside of Luai would be absolutely amazing and is exactly the player that you need. So I think Latrell is a shoo-in, should be selected. And if he wants to have a bit of a think about whether he wants to, you know, I think there was talk about him standing himself down. I think someone needs to talk to him and say, mate, we need you. We need you, and you need to get your head in the game, because if he goes beast mode, then we're back in the frame for a possible win. And then possibly even confidence-wise going into the Suncorp decider in game three with a bit of a win beneath our wings kind of thing. So I think at the very least Latrell needs to be there. I think there is an argument to be made that Mitchell should come in for Nico Hines, but I see what you're saying. I think the risk is too high though for the Blues to give Nico another chance. I think he really didn't show anything in terms of ability to kind of break the line or run in, and it doesn't suit the style. The way he plays for Cronulla doesn't really suit the style of the Blues at the moment. So I think that's part of the issue. And I think Moses is a better player anyway. So that's part of the problem. So look, I would say both of the Mitchells should be back in the frame and should be selected. And I think Nico potentially could actually come in as that additional player, although Matt Burton you'd made a strong argument for Matt Burton, and I think maybe that could be a good way to go as well. Tish, final words before we move on.
Yeah, well, look, I think I am susceptible to the sunken cost fallacy, right? Nico has already cost us one game. Should we continue on? But maybe it's time to bail on the Nico experiment is what you're saying. So
you've clearly looked at Psych 101 textbook before. You've gone all psychology on me. This is really interesting. All right. All right, let's move on to tackle four. History was made by the Sydney Roosters. We'll talk about that in a second. Here we go.
Yeah.
Very, very well done. Like, it really is giving me marching band vibes. But look, the Sydney Roosters have made history by signing the very first American football star from the Las Vegas Combine earlier this year. So he was the first male athlete identified in the NRL Combine. And his name is Michael Woolridge. So Michael Woolridge was a former defensive back with Saginaw Valley State University, so a college football player. He's going to soon fly to Australia to pursue a career in the NRL after impressing at the inaugural combine held earlier this year before round one. Woolridge has signed a full-time salary cap exempt contract through to the end of the Roosters preseason training, which concludes at Christmas. So if he impresses the team, he may stay on and perhaps make an unlikely debut in the NRL. Unlikely, geez, that's whoever's reporting this. That's pretty sad. Look, he got selected. That's pretty good. I'm just reading from a Daily Mail, so forgive me. He impressed in Vegas. He had a 2.7-second 20-meter sprint, bench press 125 kilos three times. He clocked 4 minutes and 50 seconds in the Bronco test. I don't know what that is. He says, I'm truly grateful to be given this opportunity to come test myself with the NRL and especially the Sydney Roosters. Woolridge has noted there's a special connection between his hometown of Detroit and the Roosters, as Sydney chairman Nick Politis has strong ties to Ford's history in Australia. So Politis started his career with WFM Motors, which he ran and expanded in 1974, which was later branded into City Ford. Politis expanded into one of the largest Ford dealerships in Australia, and he made history by making City Ford the first jersey sponsor to appear in the NRL. So that's pretty very good history lesson there. Thanks to the Daily Mail. Obviously, the Ford Motor Company was founded in Dearborn, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit, in 1903. Now, finally, Andrew Abdo, chief executive of CEO, has weighed in. The U.S., quote, the U.S. is home to some of the world's best athletes, so it's exciting for fans to see the first male player join an NRL club directly from the NRL Combine held in Las Vegas. Part of the NRL's long-term U.S. strategy is the targeting of elite talent who have the explosive power, speed, and skill to make it in one of the world's best professional sporting competitions. We're confident Americans will love rugby league, and hopefully they'll see one of their own pulling on an NRL jersey in the years to come, close quote. Tish, is this a big deal or not?
I think it's an absolute huge deal, because I think it's absolute evidence of the favoritism and bias the NRL has towards the Sydney Roosters by giving them a full-time contract with a salary exemption. By God, the Roosters are allowed to cheat the salary system. They just need to have a player with an American passport. That's it. Right? Is that what we're hearing, right? Do you know what I mean? And, you know, like, look, it's good. It's great for the International Rugby League. It's great that, because I think we do need to have American-born players in the NRL playing at the elite level so they can become superstars over there, right? But I just think that these four clubs that got to play this year, they get an advantage in this area, don't they? Where you know, they got to play the first round. We haven't even had the announcement of who the next four teams are going to be. And here they are, allowed to buy salary-exempt players, Dr. T. Like, can you see how this comp... You know what? Let's just all forfeit now. You know, we know that this game is for the Roosters to win and win alone, right? That's exactly what they're doing. By giving this... you know, this, I'm sure, fine athlete, a salary-exempt contract because he signed for the Sydney Roosters. That's the only thing. It's got me angry here, Dr. T. But look, I think great for America, bad for NRL. That's what I think. How about you?
I feel like you're missing the point a little bit, which is this is I think this is a big shift, and I think it's something that we should definitely capitalize on. Look, yes, I agree. I think not completely, but I agree that it could be seen as being a bit favoritism. But I think, look, think of it as an incentive for other clubs to do the same thing, to kind of and maybe there's a limit, maybe there's some hidden rule there that you're only allowed one or two salary cap exempt players if they come from a particular kind of mechanism like this mechanism. And I think that's absolutely fair enough. It means that if players are brought in who are genuinely American college football players who've passed the tests and can bring some kind of exposure and connection to the US, I think that's a good thing. And why not? Why can't we see one in each of the teams? I think that would be really fantastic. Who knows? One of them over time may end up being an absolutely great player. And, you know, you see, again, the question about whether, you know, you're getting athletes as opposed to footy players, rugby league players with that kind of IQ. Well, what's the difference now? We've got lots of players who don't have the IQ but have, absolute kind of athletic skills and prowess. And I think that's okay. But again, there's a greater good here, which is expanding into the US. And I think this is a great thing. Well done, the Roosters, for being pioneers in that and finding that legal loophole for salary camped exempt salaries. And, you know, well done. But I think I want to see other clubs doing it as well. I'd love to see eventually a player that has come from the US make it into a top grade squad. I think it's absolutely possible. If you see, you know, the skills that are required these days in the NRL, again, it's a lot of hard work and a lot of years, but eventually you will see players from the US with zero rugby league experience getting to the top grade just purely on their athletic ability. And, like we've seen it before, we've seen the same thing kind of happens with players from the South Pacific that are kind of enticed over because of their skills in different games as well. So I think it's possible. I think I'd like to see this. Other clubs doing this. So well done to the Roosters. I'm on the positive side of that. So let's move on to our very quick review of the Challenge Cup final. Here is Tackle 5. All right, so the Wigan Warriors defeated Sam Burgess's Warrington Wolves 18-8 in the Challenge Cup final in front of, I think it was about 65 or so thousand at Wembley, which is amazing, although a lot of people are saying that still left about 30,000 empty seats, which wasn't a good look, but still a pretty big crowd. But Wigan, again, the famous Wigan team, again, wins the Challenge Cup. You know, it seems like they've won so many of these. In fact, they have how many have they won? Let me just check. I saw it somewhere. Oh, where is it? No, I completely missed it. But they've won. Look, I think they've won the most in history. But look, Wigan is now being talked about as being in the conversation about one of the greatest club sides in the modern era. There are six teams that have held all four major domestic trophies: the Super League title, the League Leaders' Shield, the World Club Challenge, and the Challenge Cup. At the same time, they're now in that frame, Wigan. And of course, this is all has to do with Matt Peate, who is a relative nobody outside of Wigan. When he was appointed as coach for the 2022 season, he's become one of my successful coaches. He's won his fifth major honour in 2.5 seasons there, so he's done a great job. His teams are methodical, they are resolute, and in the right moments, they are devastating. I'm just reading this off The Guardian. The game plan was executed to full effect as they struck when it mattered against Warrington Wolves to secure a record extending, oh, there it is, 21st Challenge Cup and a first at Wembley since 2013. So they already have the record for the most Challenge Cups. So the famous Wigan, you know, iconic Wigan team continues to extend its record of 21 Challenge Cups. But the challenge for them now is one that seems quite realistic. They could become the only the fourth Super League team to win the treble in one season. Tish, could we be seeing history in the making this year for the Wigan Warriors?
Yeah, look, potentially. Look, I think they've got a great lineup, right? And, you know, they're doing really well. Interesting, like, you know, just reading from the reports, you know, an old Parramatta Eel in Bevan French, right? Doing tremendous things at standoff, which is the 5/8 position. So not even playing on the wing anymore, right? So that kind of shows the evolution of his game. But yeah, look, 8-8, and look, we sort of, you know, over here in Australia, we kind of don't get too much reports about the Super League. But, you know, Wigan, they're able to beat the Panthers quite comfortably. Well, not quite comfortably, but yeah, they're able to do well in the Challenge Cup over the last few years. And, you know, it's the one thing the Panthers have not been able to win. Combine that with the fact that Wigan have won multiple years, they're winning the Challenge Cup. As you said, they could only be the fourth team in history to win everything this year. Why not? Like, you know, I just think that they should be recognised as one of the best teams in the modern era. And yeah, Matt Peate is not a, yeah, you know, is not a household name in the world of coaching. So he's done a tremendous job with players that, you know, it's a very well balanced lineup of international stars. We're not just talking about just a whole bunch of Australian imports. There are a lot of English players. You know, a couple of, you know, imports. There's, you know, it's a very well balanced side from an international point of view as well. So, yeah, Wigan. Let's see, and you know, can they win it all? And I wonder if they could win another Challenge Cup at the start of next year.
Absolutely. And look, they. I guess the other thing to mention is they're currently in the Super League, coming equal first or second, really, in terms of their points differential with St. Helens on top. So St. Helens, I think they won last year. The team to beat for sure, but Wigan definitely have, you know, a lot to play for. So I think that will be really amazing if they could win that historic treble. And, yeah, against all odds, because I think Matt Peate, don't know much about him, and I think he's had a bit of an interesting kind of career as opposed to Sam Burgess. But we will keep an eye on the Wigan Warriors, and I think, look, gone are the days of the stars of Australian rugby league heading over there to have a guest stint in teams like Wigan, Leeds, and St. Helens. You know, definitely there is. There are parallels with players that have been discarded from Australia and gone there and done some great things, and equally players that have come from over there and done some great things over here. So there is, I think, more of that exchange of players is required. I think I'd like to see more of that some of the English players coming over here and having that cross-pollination. There is obviously there's a lot to be said about English football in general and how much it's struggling at the moment in terms of crowds and things like that. And I think it's not at all in the same level of the NRL. So, you know, going forward, we're going to look at, the Wigan Warriors, how they're going to go this year. Are they going to get that historic treble? And also just in general, the Super League, how it's going. Is Peter Volandis, shifting positioning the NRL for a takeover and potentially kind of bring some much needed funds to the Super League over there and, bring it up to speed. We are talking about a competition that has only 12 teams in it. So this is one of the problems that we've seen with that at the moment. They're trying to contract a little bit to consolidate. It's not really working. So let's see how we go. The same sort of teams keep winning year on year out. So we'll keep an eye on the Super League as well. So look, having said that, let's wrap this up with the tips for the NRL. Here we go, tackle number 6. All right, last week our poor tipping performance continued with, 3 out of 7 NRL, and we also didn't get the, both of us got the same, we also didn't get the women's state of origin either. So you are now on 60 points and I'm on 54. Round 15 is the Beanie for Brain Cancer round. So I think you can sort of purchase beanies and all funds go to, is it still going to the Mark Hughes Foundation? I'm not really sure, but I'm sure there is something that we can contribute to brain cancer research. So well done, NRL, for this is one of those legitimately good rounds that have an actual impact on the social justice cause or medical cause that we're connecting to. So well done, the NRL, for doing this. Let's get into the games, though. We've got the Sharks versus the Dolphins on Thursday night at PointsBet Stadium. At home, I am looking at the Sharks to win this one.
Yeah, I'm tipping the Sharks to win the Sea Life Trophy.
Of course. Raiders and Cowboys. This will be an interesting one. I think the Raiders, having had the benefit of a week off, will come back strong. And at home, a cold Canberra Friday night game will be there to their benefit. So Raiders will win that one.
Yes, I'm going to tip the Raiders to win in the battle of the horse combatants.
Except Raiders are on ships, but anyway.
Oh, Raiders are on ships. Okay.
I don't know what you're going to say about this next one. Rabbitohs versus Broncos. Look, I think the Broncos will win this one. I think it's easy to see that. But, they will trample all over the Rabbitohs.
Well, look, both teams are missing Adam Reynolds. So I'm going to tip the Rabbitohs in a bit of an upset.
Oh, wow. Tigers versus Titans. Look, Tigers are under a lot of pressure. Titans have had some good wins this year. Battle of 15th versus 17th, and unfortunately, I'm going to tip the Titans.
Yeah, look, I think this is the MasterChef Battle of the Spoon. So let's give it to the Spoon Bowl, as somebody told me. Let's give it to the Tigers, I think.
Tigers. They are at home at Leichhardt Oval, I should say, which is almost their spiritual home. So maybe they're in for a bit of a treat there. Let's see. Warriors versus Storm. Warriors at home. I am tipping a Warriors upset. I think they have found a bit of a spark there. I think something about the way they're playing in the halves as well, changing it up a little bit. Tamari Martin, I think, was there. I think they're doing well. So Warriors will beat the Storm.
Look, I'm going to tip the Storm to be able to win in, over in New Zealand, but it's going to be a cracker, that one.
All right, Eels versus Roosters, Saturday evening at Combank Stadium. Normally a cauldron for us, but I think the way that we're playing is not going to be that great. I think the Roosters will win this one.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Roosters as well. I think there's too many players for the Roosters in any big game. So, yeah, coming off the bye as well, right?
That's right. That's right. All right, Manly, St. George at Four Points Park, Sunday, 2 p.m. game. Look, where else would you rather be on Sunday afternoon than in the beautiful northern side of Sydney? Manly to win this one, although they probably wish that they could just go out for a dip in the beach rather than playing the Dargons.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to tip Manly as well. I think just at home, both teams have been a bit up and down, but I think the home advantage should be enough for Manly to take this one.
All right, and finally, the Knights versus the Panthers at McDonald Jones Stadium, Sunday, 4 p.m. game. Oh, look, I think the Knights played well against the Storm, but I think the Panthers are too strong, so I'll pick the Panthers.
Yeah, the same. I think the Knights, I don't know how they're doing. They just, but looking at the team list, they seem to have a lot of injuries. So I'm going to have to tip the Panthers, who've seemed to, doing well with Jerome Luai playing halfback.
Absolutely. All right. And the Bulldogs have the bye, so they're going to be firmly entrenched in the top eight now. I think that's a wrap. So, Tish, thanks for everything. It's been a big week, and we will look forward to hearing about the Blues and the Queensland team announcements next week, so probably talk about that next week. Over to you to wrap this up.
Well, thank you, Dr. T. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Stay warm. But that's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We are your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.